European Central Bank to the rescue. Hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. This is the Marketplace Midday Update. Today is September 6th. It is a Thursday. Coming up on the show, we're going to tell you all about what the European Central Bank did today, the big plan to save the euro. Also, some very good jobs numbers coming out this morning ahead of tomorrow's big report from the Labor Department about August employment. We'll have that and a lot more coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
The European Central Bank has unveiled its plan to save the euro. The bank's president, Mario Draghi, said this morning that the ECB will buy European government bonds in an effort to stem the debt crisis. From the Marketplace European desk in London, Stephen Beard reports.
Today, Draghi spelled out precisely how far his central bank is prepared to go to save the euro. He said it will buy the government bonds of struggling eurozone countries in order to bring down their borrowing costs. These purchases would, in his words, be unlimited. But this won't be a free lunch for the countries concerned, like Italy or Spain. In return, they would have to accept strict budget rules. Draghi said the new plan would combat speculation against the euro.
We will have a fully effective backstop to avoid destructive scenarios with potentially severe challenges for price stability in the euro area.
Investors warmly welcomed the plan. Analysts said it could bring some calm back to eurozone financial markets. But while speculation may subside, few believe that Europe's long-running debt crisis has been finally laid to rest. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Well, let's get some analysis now from Adolfo Laurenti, Deputy Chief Economist with Mesirow Financial. He's with us from Chicago. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Adolfo, do you think this is going to be enough to save the euro, as Mario Draghi said it would probably be?
No, Jeremy. I think the euro will be saved by its member state, not by the European Central Bank. But the European Central Bank can help, and I think this plan will help quite a bit for three reasons. It relieves some of the market pressure from the government bond markets in Spain, Greece, Italy. It buys some time for this country to continue reform. And finally, it maintains some discipline. It includes conditions to force beneficiaries to continue reform and austerity, and that should really help them to keep the bar straight.
But we've heard that before, Adolfo. I mean, we've heard people, say they're buying time for the countries to get their fiscal houses in order, and then they don't do it. So do you think they can do it this time?
Well, I think this is really the critical point, how to enforce those conditions. Germany has been saying again and again to Greece and Spain, we are not going to bail you out, but we are willing to help if you help yourself first. And the ECB translates this principle in a bond-buying plan that can be cancelled if these countries will not maintain or will delay their reform. So the real question is, this commitment credible, and how that threat will be executed if something goes wrong. I think that's exactly what the markets will be testing over the next couple of weeks.
All right, and Adolfo, I want to let you to talk about something else before I let you go. Two very strong reports on job growth in this country this morning. ADP said private employers added 201,000 jobs last month, which was far more than expected. And also, the number of people applying for unemployment benefits dropped last week to 365,000. What do you make of that?
Well, we are catching a breather. We've been waiting for improvement in the labor market in the United States for quite some time. And these data finally point in the right direction. It's slow, it's gradual, but it at least is moving in where we would like the job market to be. And they are consistent with other indicators like auto sales, retail sales, that really shows an improvement in this economy. So we really gain some confidence that we may see things improving when the fall will come.
Adolfo Laurenti, Deputy Chief Economist with Mesirow Financial. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Tonight, President Obama will accept his party's nomination for president at the convention in Charlotte. Last night, former President Bill Clinton made an impassioned endorsement.
When President Barack Obama took office, The economy was in free fall. It had just shrunk 9.4% of GDP. We were losing 750,000 jobs a month. Are we doing better than that today? The answer is yes.
Well, as part of our coverage of the real economy, what matters most to voters in this election, we sent Marketplace's David Gura to North Carolina to see how people are feeling about the economic recovery there. And he sent us this report from a startup in Raleigh.
Alera Labs is headquartered at a university on NC State's Centennial Campus in what's called a technology incubator. The school leases lab space to startups like this one, founded by Dimitri Mondos.
They're letting us use some of their resources because as a startup, you know, we need some sophisticated equipment these days that otherwise we wouldn't have access to.
Alera Labs isn't a big operation, at least not yet. Right now, it's just one room filled with machines. The company does chemistry work on contract for drug companies. Mondo says his small business gives him some stability, a safety net.
This is something, you know, I cannot control the economy, but I can control this, you know, to some extent, you know, because if I put, you know, 40, 60, 80 hours a week, I know that something will come out of it.
Mondos came here from Russia 20 years ago. He did a postdoc at NC State, and he knows chemistry, but he's still learning how to run a small business.
Most of the profits that we made in the first year, you know, we put it right back. We purchased new equipment, but we need to grow. And for the high-tech business, I mean, there is a lot of investment.
One of Mondos' first hires was his son Gene, who just graduated from NC State with a degree in microbiology. Gene's looking at the November election through the prism of his dad's company.
This is going to be the first election that I will legally be able to vote. I have just become a U.S. citizen, you know, right in between the elections, so I am legit to go. So I've definitely been paying more attention to what's going on.
Gene Mondos has been studying the candidates, and he favors President Obama. He says he wants someone who will help small businesses. As for his dad...
And will you vote?
I'm not sure.
He pauses again.
Yeah, actually, I don't think I ever voted.
Dimitri Mondo says he doesn't see the impact of his one vote, and he's not sure it makes that big a difference who's in the White House. He says he doesn't like how his choices are so limited.
You know, you can only choose between two, but maybe I'm not happy with either one. So what do I do?
Dimitri Mondo says he's grateful it's a free country, and he's able to say that. In Raleigh, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
Amazon is expected to unveil the latest version of its Kindle Fire tablet today. The Kindle Fire is cheaper than Apple's iPad and profit margins are thin, but Amazon is trying to sell as many as possible so that customers fill those tablets with books and movies purchased from Amazon.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
The UN said this morning that global food prices were flat in August, easing fears of a global food crisis for now. But as Marketplace's Adrian Hill reports, prices are likely to climb in the long term.
The future of global food prices isn't set in stone.
That's one of those questions if I knew the answer to, I'd be a rich man.
David Lobel is a professor at Stanford, but he says you can probably make a pretty good guess.
Most assessments put future prices at significantly higher than they have been in the past decade or two.
More people hungrier for more food are part of the reason. There are also supply issues, among them climate change. A new study from Oxfam says climate change will cause a steady increase in price among staple foods. But it can also cause dramatic spikes, prices doubling in days, as droughts and floods become more regular. Heather Coleman is with Oxfam.
The research that we did tells us that climate change is going to increasingly drive extreme weather shocks and that those weather shocks are going to cause more dramatic price spikes in global food prices.
And she says quick changes in food prices are much harder for people to handle, especially in places where getting enough to eat accounts for most of a family's budget. I'm Adrian Hill for Marketplace.
Later today, gun maker Smith & Wesson will tell us about its quarterly earnings, which come in the wake of three mass shootings. But as Marketplace's Shireen Marisol Meraji reports, those shootings have not stopped Americans from buying firearms.
Actually, just the opposite is happening. Americans are buying more guns, says Adam Winkler, law professor
and author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America.
He says some people are worried about their personal safety.
Other people just feel that there's going to be new gun control laws and we better buy our guns now before those laws get enacted.
Kai Von Rumor is an industry analyst with Cowen & Company. He says the data backs up Winkler's claim. Gun sales were up 27% this August compared to last August.
In July, we had the Colorado shootings, and in August, we had the Empire State shooting and the Sikh Temple shooting.
But it's not just mass shootings.
I mean, it's the question, what will happen in election season? Who will get elected?
Von Rumor points to the 48% increase the month President Obama was elected. We'll see how the gun business fares this November. I'm Shireen Marisol Meraji for Marketplace.
Tomorrow, the Labor Department will release its August jobs report, and there will be a lot of talk about the millions of Americans who are still out of work. But what about the people who have jobs? Are they satisfied? That's the topic of today's Attitude Check, our weekly partnership with the polling firm Gallup.
And the latest poll numbers suggest
margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said.
Frank Newport is editor-in-chief at Gallup, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So how satisfied are Americans with their jobs right now?
Well, you know, they're a lot more satisfied now than they were back in, let's say, 1989 in the 90s. To be specific with you, 47% of Americans are completely satisfied with their job. These are workers, of course, and another 42% are somewhat satisfied. And you put that together, you've only got about 1 out of 10 Americans who tell us, at any rate, who are working, that they're dissatisfied. Go back to 1989, and only 28% were completely satisfied. So we've really jumped up now, and American workers, at any rate, maybe because they're glad to have a job, are more satisfied now than they used to be.
Are they happy with the amount of pay and benefits that they're getting?
Well, we gave them 13 different things. How's that? And said, for each one, are you completely satisfied with this part of your job? And no, pay would be down at the more negative end of the scale. Actually, the thing American workers are least satisfied with is the amount of on-the-job stress, which was interesting to us. Only 29% of Americans are completely satisfied with that. But the other things that Americans are less satisfied with that work are the amount of money they earn, retirement, chances for promotion, health benefits, all those kind of tangibles are what workers are least satisfied with. What they're most satisfied with is, interestingly, the physical safety of the conditions at their workplace, and also intangibles. Americans are pretty satisfied with their coworkers, and this is interesting, pretty satisfied with their boss.
Interesting. And Frank, does any of this have any impact on what people are going to do this November when they go to the polls?
Yeah, we're in the election season now, so I would say everything is politics. How's that? We actually looked at it. We don't find any difference whatsoever, not a smidgen of difference in job satisfaction between Republicans and Democrats. So we don't have one group of people out there, politically speaking, who are in angst about their jobs. They're going to rush to the voting place to try to do something about it. Satisfaction is very equal. The people who are less satisfied with their jobs are independents, and, of course, they're less likely to vote.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at Gallup. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Well, McDonald's is going vegetarian, at least in India. The fast food chain is opening its first ever vegetarian restaurant there next year in a city that is home to one of the Sikh religion's holiest sites. The BBC's Rahul Tandon has the story from Calcutta.
I'm sitting in a McDonald's in Calcutta. Plenty of youngsters are tucking into their Big Macs. But customers in India are about to experience a first, a meatless McDonald's. Some business watchers in India, like Mudha Patalaya of Trisys, says it could be a shrewd business decision for the company, as many Hindu and Sikh temples are in meat-free zones and religious tourism in those areas is booming.
I'm a little surprised. I think they should have come and hit the ground running with vegetarian restaurants. I mean, 1.2 billion people, out of which maybe 60% are vegetarian or 50% are vegetarian.
So what do customers here make of the plans?
I think so, because when you go to these religious places, at that time, people are pure vegetarians.
Not really. I mean, you would think of McDonald's with a nice, juicy meat burger.
For a company that is known globally for its meat dishes, it's a bold move. But India, with its fast-growing, cash-rich middle class, represents a great market for McDonald's, which plans to double their number of restaurants here over the next 3 years. And they will be hoping that their new veg outlets are as busy as the one I'm in. In Calcutta, I'm the BBC's Rahul Tandon for Marketplace.
And while we're talking restaurants, actress Eva Longoria of Desperate Housewives fame is opening up a new kind of restaurant, a steakhouse specifically for women. It's opening in Las Vegas, and according to the LA Times, it will feature smaller portions and a catwalk for fashion shows. It'll also have fog machines and rain curtains, which I guess are the two main things you need in a steakhouse for women, or something like that. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.